Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA and we've got the A-team here. Joining us from Boston is Jackie McMullen. Hello, Jackie. How are you?
I'm all right, Brian. How about you?
Good. I am just back from New York where I went to a podcast upfront.
What does this
That's
mean?
That's right.
What does this mean?
I can't say.
But
that's where we are in the
this.
Podcast. I don't know what it means. I went to a podcast upfront. I spoke about this fine podcast in front of many advertisers, so and influencers, so that we can keep doing it. That's what I did. Went all the way to New York for that. And joining us from his home in Dallas, Texas, one of the finest Texans you'll ever meet, is Timothy Band McMahon. Hello, Tim.
Howdy, partners. How are you?
There's a lot going on in the NBA. I think we should probably start with Bradley Beal's extension. Is that? I mean, I could start at a lot of different places, but I feel like that's pretty significant news.
I mean, considering that we were talking last week about where he could possibly get traded, and you know, go ahead and light that one on fire.
It's an interesting extension. I mean, it was, I think it's great for the Wizards, but it's kind of, he's sort of splitting the difference because it's a 2-year extension, but only 1 year. He's got a player option in the last year of it. So he's really committing for one additional year, but he's taking himself out of the 2021 free agent class, which is already shaping up to be another barn burner. And he's basically sending a message that he is fine with this rebuilding situation with the Wizards this season. He cannot be traded this season, in fact, because he can't be traded for 6 months, and that carries him past the trade deadline. And so there's no pressure about that. Now, just because he signed this extension doesn't mean that he can't get traded next summer. And, in fact, this deal put in a 15% trade kicker into his contract. So, in fact, he could even get a significant financial bonus since this is, I think, over $33 million a year in the extension. So it doesn't necessarily mean he's committed to Washington forever, but it certainly, Jackie, removes the short-term pressure on the Wizards and certainly takes away a big chip that could have fallen during this regular season.
Well, if you're the Denver Nuggets, I would even say the Lakers, really bummed out today because you're not going to be adding this piece. That would be very, very valuable. And if you're the Wizards, give Tommy Shepard a pat on the back. He said his priority was to keep Bradley Beal in the fold. Now, whether he's done that long term or not remains to be seen. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, why did Bradley Beal do this deal? You know, he gave up things. Not necessarily. So let's go through it, okay? He's going to make the money he's going to make, good money, and he can decline his player option in 2022. And if he re-signs with the Wizards, Brian and Tim, he's eligible to sign the biggest contract we've ever seen. 5 years, $266 million, because he would have reached that magical 10 years of service. So it's not to frame it as though Bradley Beal's being nostalgic and he and Mark Bartlestein are leaving money on the table. It just really all depends on how you look at that.
Yeah, I think this was one of these deals where everybody walked out of the room feeling happy, but everybody walked out of the room knowing that there's still a lot of flexibility. The Wizards can still trade him next summer if they don't like the direction of things and still get terrific value because they'll have 2 years left on his contract. This would have been the situation that the Pelicans would have dreamed of a year ago with Anthony Davis. Even though he wasn't totally 100% sold on the organization, after he switched agents, there was that tension that existed, and that tension was hanging over the organization from day one of training camp, and it eventually boiled over, and it turned into a derailing situation. That's, you know, think of how much different last season would have been for the Pelicans had they been able to get this type of deal. And obviously, Anthony Davis didn't want to stay there. This definitely is a NBA shaking maneuver that got done. Now, he had to get it done by October 21st, I think was the deadline, or maybe October 22nd. I can't remember. Yeah, 21st. So
Well, it's a huge blow to the trade market and a huge blow to next summer's free agency market. Probably the best player out of both markets.
Well, he would have been under contract for next year, but if he had one year left, yeah, yeah. Jackie, did you see the interview that that Buddy Hield did with media in Sacramento last night after the game?
I did not. Please enlighten me.
McMahon, did you see that one?
I did, and he has been very outspoken. He talked to my guy Jason Anderson from the Sacramento Bee last week and ruffled some feathers in that Kings front office, basically, you know, saying, hey, let's get this done. It's time to get it done, da da da. And so this is the first time that the Sacramento media as a large group got him since then. And, you know, to sum up his message, it was basically like, sign me to an extension that is going to be north of $100 million, or let's figure out where my next home is going to be.
Yeah, and he, you know, this is always a difficult situation. It doesn't happen every October, but it does happen routinely where there's a player in the middle of a contract talk. It's not something that we're used to, because typically when guys are in contract talks, they're not playing. They're not talking to the media on a regular basis. That all happens in the summer. This is one where when you've got these guys coming off rookie deals on extensions, where it plays out in real time in front of everybody. Some guys keep it totally quiet. Buddy Hield is not, and he is applying some pressure. Now Chris Haynes of Yahoo reported yesterday that the offer that the Kings have made him is 4 years and $90 million. Buddy pretty much acknowledged in the interview yesterday that he is not asking for the max, but he
wants
looking
110, like Haynes reported, and right. And he told the Sacramento Bee after the group broke up last night, he confirmed that $90 million offer, and he said, "I see it like an insult," and you know, went on and on.
But his leverage is very minimal, Jackie, because...
Right. Well, yeah, he's restricted.
Right. Yeah, he can say he wants to go to another home, but he doesn't have control on that.
Right.
Right, but in next summer's market, it's a thin market, and if the Kings are just... If they want to just hold firm at $90 million, I'm pretty confident in predicting that he would get an offer well higher than $90 million. And obviously that's what he's betting on too.
Which they could just match. I mean,
yeah, that's
Jackie.
Right, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. If you're the Kings, and they're trying to get Bogdanovich done now too, and they've put what is the, you know, max extension to me is misleading. It's the biggest extension they can offer him, but nowhere near the max, if that makes sense. I don't see him signing that, so they're going to have to try to keep Bogdanovich. They've offered him, it's like $51 million over 4 years, which, again, is the most they can offer now, but he's going to get more than that. They've paid Harrison Barnes $85 million already. And then, you know, in not too long, they're going to have De'Aaron Fox coming up. And, you know, I think Fox is probably going to end up being a max rookie extension guy. And then you'll have Bagley coming up the year after that. That team's going to get very expensive very quickly.
They're similar to the Nuggets in that way, where the Nuggets had all these guys coming to get paid at one time. I just don't know. The Nuggets invested in those guys, and they are returning on the investment right away. They're, you know, top five team in the league. Is this collection, Jackie, a top five team in the league potentially that you want to be skirting the luxury tax for? I mean, that's... It's a
tough
call.
It's too early to say, isn't it? But I like I like Marvin Bagley. I like De'Aaron Fox, don't you? I like Buddy Hield, but I don't know if I like him at, what was the number you said, $120 million?
110, I guess.
110. Yeah, and say they split the middle, 4 years, $100 million for Buddy Hield, who, but look, I mean, an elite shooter in his prime is going to get paid.
I get it. He is.
And so, I mean... To me, the head scratcher is that they made that big of a commitment to Harrison Barnes, which, you know, obviously he knew that that kind of money was coming when he opted out of the last year of his contract and took a little haircut.
But sometimes you do that, Tim, because you need to establish a veteran presence and some stability, and you know it's going to cost you. I mean, I remember when the Celtics signed Al Horford to the deal they signed him to.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that seems like a lot of money, you know?
I know. I was well outspoken on this podcast about it.
Right. But what it did was set the stage for other players to want to be there. And that's sometimes you have to do that. And I think that's probably what Sacramento is doing. So Sacramento is a great young core. Now, have we identified already which of that core is the most valuable? You know,
I do think that's Fox, and that's clear. I also think we can't call it a great young core until they taste the playoffs. I mean, this is the best Kings team in a decade and a half, but their playoff drought's about that long.
Right. So again. Are you ready? Are you prepared to declare Buddy Hield, you know, the biggest part of that core, or a big part of that core, by paying him that kind of money?
They're in a tough spot where they finally look like they have a competitive team that they could keep the core together for a while, but is competitive, you know, competing for one of the last playoff spot or two in the Western Conference. And, you know, you can say there's upside because of the youth there, but is that worth getting really, really expensive? So they're in a really tough spot for a franchise that has the longest playoff drought in the league.
Right.
I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Bogdan Bogdanović because, you know, we have a lot going on in the NBA right now, but this is a situation that teams in the league are watching, okay? Oh, yes. Because, first off, he may have been... If he wasn't the most impressive player in the World Cup this year in China, he was in the top three. Ricky Rubio won the MVP, but Bogdanović was spectacular, especially shooting from outside. He is not going to be a starter for this team.
Right. If they're playing Barnes at the four, which they're doing because they're insisting on playing Bagley at the five after signing – or I'm sorry. If they're playing Barnes at the three, they're playing Bagley at the four – that crowds out Bogdanović. And so that's the thing. If they sign Hield to this, you know, if they make that long-term commitment to Hield, they've already got the long-term commitment to Barnes. Their wing starting jobs are full. And Bogdanović is clearly a starting caliber player in this league. And, you know, I'm sure I've heard some of the same rumblings as you of, hey, if they're locked into Hield and Barnes, Bogdanović, you know, he might not be thrilled with being a sixth man there.
That is exactly what I'm hearing. So let's see what happens with Hield. I mean, it's possible that Hield doesn't extend and he becomes, this becomes a situation where they play it out between them during the year. But if Hield does extend, and I feel like even though they're pretty dug in, we have a few days, Buddy Hield wants to sign right now. I kind of feel like
million.
right. But Jackie, I mean, I don't get the feeling that Jaylen Brown. Well, you tell me. You think he wants to sign right now? I feel like Jaylen Brown wants to
let it go. Not for 4 years. Not for 4 years and $80 million. I wouldn't sign that if I were Jaylen Brown either. And by the way, I don't think the Celtics expected him to sign it. This is their history, Brian. Go back and look. I think the last guy they extended on a rookie deal was, you have to go all the way back to Rajon Rondo.
I remember that. And that happened at the buzzer.
Yes, it did.
And there was a game going on. Rondo was playing in Cleveland. I remember Bill Duffy at halftime. Bill Duffy was talking last numbers out with Danny Ainge in the hallway outside the visitor's locker room in Cleveland. Because back then it was October 31st, no matter when the season started. Now they've altered it so that it ends that window ends before the season started. I've been a couple of places where deals got done. I remember being in Philly the night that Drew Holiday signed his extension. And Doug Collins, I was out, I was talking to him in the hallway after the game. And he was, I mean, he may not have been being 100% truthful, but he was like, oh, I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, we made him a fresh offer before the game, et cetera. And they ended up within an hour and a half, he had signed an extension in Philly. And that was strange that these guys are playing these games with it, you know, with it, hanging over their heads. But, if it passes with Hield, I do think he wants to sign it. I do think it wants to happen, but if Hield signs it, watch what happens with Bogdanović. Not immediately, but in the short term.
If Hill doesn't, the Kings might, you know, and he's making noise about wanting a new home and all that. Their best move then might be to explore the trade market for him. Obviously, you got to get past December 15th when whatever 40% of the league is available, but they might be better off at that point moving on from Hield, getting some value in return and, you know, committing to Bogdanović as their starting two guard.
Well, let's see how Bogdanović plays.
But they don't have to do that. They don't have to do that because, see, well, my experience with all these GMs, when you talk to them around this time of year, when you're talking about these extensions and when you talk to the agents, everybody has a number. Everybody has an idea of what the number is. And the player knows how much he can swallow and take. And the team has a number that they'll say, okay, we're not going to pay him this up front. But if a team makes an offer sheet, we'll go this far to keep this guy because this is the finite value we feel he has. And if it exceeds that, we gambled and we lost. But these guys are so good at monitoring the market, that rarely happens. It really does. Oftentimes, if there's an offer sheet made and they've decided what the price is for Buddy Hield or Jaylen Brown or whomever else you want to talk about, they've got it all mapped out and they'll either match it or they'll move on because they've already established that number. Now, in the case of Buddy Hield, wouldn't it be nice to see him another year before you as the Sacramento Kings commit to that kind of money? I think so.
Yeah, well, especially since both Bogdanović and Hield will be restricted. It gives the Kings a little bit of breathing
room. You have the leverage.
But, yeah.
Yep, they got the leverage.
It's interesting. I mean, you know, I don't know how much of a relevant situation the Kings are going to be during the course of this season, but it's something definitely to watch over the next, you know, 72 whatever hours to see how that plays out.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
You probably think, and it's okay. I don't have anything against it. You probably think you may know more about the NBA than some of us on this podcast. You may know more about the game, and you know, you may be right. That's why I think that you could probably put your money where your mouth is. And how would you do that? Well, you would do it at DraftKings because you put your basketball knowledge to the test with one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings right here to tip off the season. It's going to start next week, and you can start doing it at DraftKings immediately. They're giving you a free shot at $100,000 with your first deposit when you sign up with the code HOOP. That's H-O-O-P. You draft your lineup, and you feel the sweat like never before. Every shot, rebound, and assist means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. This is what you do. You just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, show that you're smarter than Jackie and Tim and me, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching a game quite like having a shot at $100,000. Download the app or head over to DraftKings.com now and use our code HOOP, and you can play for free with your first deposit. That's HOOP, H-O-O-P. You can get your share of $100,000 in prizes. Again, code HOOP with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Hello. No one is available to take your call.
Jackie, something interesting is happening in Boston with their little spark plug rookie, Carson Edwards. Did you watch the other night when he hit 8 3-pointers?
Oh yeah, of course.
In one quarter,
right?
What is the feeling up there about him right now?
Well, this is why they drafted him. Now he's a streak shooter, or he was in college. But when he goes, he reminds me of Vinnie Johnson. You know, the microwave. And you should see these kids. You should see this. I hate to sound this way, but his legs. They look like Saquon. It looks like Barkley. Saquon Barkley.
He looks like a running back.
He looks like a running back. I can't believe I botched that name. He's one of the best running backs in the NFL. And so this is what, you know, this is what they were hoping he could do. And, I mean, he's going to make the team. I think that's obvious.
I like the microwave comparison because it's definitely that same kind of frame. Except for the microwave wasn't pulling up from 30 feet.
Right. But you know what?
The modern day microwave.
You know what? Right, but think about it, Tim. If Vinny Johnson had a chance to pull up from three, if the game was being played that way,
exactly,
he would have been all right with that. Him and World Be Free and a bunch of other old-time gunslingers. They would have adjusted to that pretty. But, you know, so our old colleague Chris Forsberg, from those three-pointers Tuesday, he listed all the distances. 20 feet, 30 feet, 25 feet, 26, 30, 33, 28, Jeez. 33, 28. His average distance shooting those threes was 28 and a half feet. Think about
also,
that.
Also, they were all over the place. Some of them were catching shoots. Some of them he was coming off floppy action, coming off screens. Some of them,
the 33-footers were just pull up, just like the guy.
Pull up,
it was ridiculous.
They were Steph Curry bombs, is what they were.
Yeah.
You know.
So here's what I wanted. Here's why I brought this up. Something happened on draft night this year that is going to, I think, be something that we talk about a lot in the short term here. So on draft night, there was a Sixers-Celtics trade. Now, obviously, this is. There's an incredible amount of scar tissue between these teams. Obviously, the Tatum Markelle Fultz trade, one of the most pivotal moments for those two franchises in recent memory. Obviously, they've had playoff matchups. Then this offseason, Al Horford leaves Boston to one of their biggest rivals in Philly. But they made a trade on draft night that potentially could be incredibly fascinating. So what happened was the Celtics had the 20th pick. Sixers had the 22nd pick, I think. It was at the 22nd pick. No, 24 and 22 is what I think it was. Anyway, the Sixers really, really wanted Matisse Thybulle. And so it was at the 20th pick. Boston traded the 20th pick for the 24th pick. And the 33rd pick. So they basically got the 33rd pick to move up the cost of moving up four spots was the 33rd pick. Well, the 33rd pick turned out to be Carson Edwards. And so right there, after they got Jason Tatum for him, you know, the Celtics fans are already like, huh, now we got another one. We got Carson Edwards. We took him right out of the Sixers' pockets. But I have not heard in a long time the amount of excitement that I have heard from scouts about a rookie defensive player in Matisse Thybulle at the Sixers. There are scouts that I have talked to who think that he is one of the most talented rookies at the defensive end that they've ever seen. He has a, he's 6'6 or so. He's not enormous by NBA standards, but he's got very long arms. And watching him a little bit in the preseason, he's a deflection machine. He is obsessed with deflecting passes and specifically getting steals. And you know how the highest level offensive ball handlers, guys like Steph Curry and Kyrie Irving, they'll start their dribble and they'll watch you and they'll wait to see you sort of commit or lean to one side or shift your weight, and then they exploit you, they cross you over. Thybulle is like this on defense. He watches you like a laser, and wherever your weakness is on the dribble, he tries to take the ball. And Brett Brown is so over the moon with him that he has basically said, you can go ahead and gamble. Like, normally you don't hear this about rookies ever. Some coaches will never let any players gamble on defense. He's so excited about him. He's like, look, go ahead and gamble for steals. You're good enough and quick enough, and you play hard enough that you can recover. Go ahead and gamble. And I don't know how much playing time, because both of these guys are on pretty star stacked teams. Mm-hmm. But this Matisse Thybulle and Carson Edwards situation between Philly and Boston could end up being something we talk about for a while.
Oh, I think Matisse Thybulle is definitely going to get minutes.
He's going to be their sixth man.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Any doubt about that. You're right about how excited the Sixers are about him. Extremely so. And he's like got this big smile, and he's like this congenial kid. And plus, they just need young, talented players on that roster. And they need some depth. He's
not a great shooter. If he was a great shooter, he never would have been there at 20. He was Pac-12 defensive player of the year last year, in like one of the worst years for the Pac-12 in its history. So, but he played 4 years at Washington, and you know, my man Kevin Pelton is very high on him, and
Pelton, I think, anybody who played 4 years at Washington.
I know. So that's why it's hard to take it seriously. But he is like, Pelton believes that. You know, he apparently almost won Pac-12 MVP last year. It was a really down year for the Pac-12, but also because he's so good at defense that he almost still won the award. So, Thibault is getting just a lot of people talking about him. The other thing that's interesting, Jackie, is that when Boston moved out of that pick at 20, and I can't ever remember talking as much about picks in the 20s at this point in the year, but it's been interesting to watch. The Grizzlies had the 21st pick. And they took Brandon Clark at 21. Clark was one of the best rookies in Summer League.
He won the Summer League MVP.
Yeah.
And he is, as our guy Mike Schmitz pointed out, he's like a perfect complementary piece to Jaren Jackson. You know, he's a guy there. He might not fit on a lot of rosters, but his game, which he's really like a 6'8", you know, just quick twitch rim running kind of guy, that fits really well with Jackson, who is a 6'11 guy who can step out and shoot the three. And so, I mean, the Grizzlies are going to stink this year, and that's in their best interest. But they've got a chance to, 2 or 3, 4 years down the road, they've got a chance to be an interesting team with that young group they've got put together.
Yeah, I never want to – whenever you look at, like, trades that were made, I think there's always an assumption that, you know, like – maybe the Celtics wouldn't have taken Clark or Thibault. I mean, you can't assume that they gave up the one player. This is something that I see that fans do all the time. Like, let's say Philly had kept the 33rd pick. Doesn't mean they had kept Carson Edwards. Doesn't mean they would have drafted Carson Edwards. So it's not fair to talk about it like that. But Boston moving back, they pick up potentially an incredible steal in the second round, but they gave up the opportunity to draft what looks like two of the best young defensive players that we've seen come in the league for a while. So, that's interesting.
So Thibault and Markel Fultz did play 1 year together, by the way. Fultz was a freshman and Thibault was a sophomore, and the team went 9-22. I'm not saying that means anything other than it's kind of
amazing. What's one of the reasons why the coach of that team got fired, I think, Lorenzo Romar, who was a terrific recruiter, but it never showed up on the court. Speaking of rookies, have you guys been able to watch much of Zion Williamson?
Yes.
I mean, you can't miss the highlights.
How can you? Yeah, you almost have no choice. But no, he's very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
When he is finishing over and through Rudy Gobert, you can't just dismiss this as, well, you know, it's preseason. I mean, this dude, the fact that he is able to get so many shots above the rim, at the rim, that's a skill unto itself. And then the athleticism, strength combination, it's ridiculously rare.
You know what I like about him? He seems to already understand how to draw fouls and get to the line. And that's going to serve
him. And he's making
very,
his free throws.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, I talked to some scouts who've watched him and they say, well, the teams aren't game planning for him yet. They're not going under the screens. And because he's a historically poor free throw shooter, let me see what he shot in the preseason. He shot 69% in the preseason. The teams are just going to foul him and they're going to go under his screens. And that, you know, and I do think that yes, there will be, once the league gets a read on him, there will be some game plans that he will have to adjust to. But I also think that good luck fouling him. He's just going to go through you.
Yeah,
he's so strong.
Fouling him doesn't mean he ain't going to finish.
Who wouldn't love that?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, this guy, you can foul him all you want. He's still going to dunk it a lot of times.
Yeah, he was not good at the defensive end, but 71% shooting. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Pretty incredible. Pretty historic, actually.
Yeah, and overall, I think he had a terrific preseason. And I saw the GM survey, the NBA GM survey came out today. And there wasn't a lot of interesting things in there, in my opinion. But he was favored to win. I think he got about 70% of the vote, and Ja Morant got, I think, most of the rest. There's a couple of guys that got votes, but you know, it's hard for me to watch the whole preseason and not be super excited about him this year. When LeBron was a rookie, one of the huge advantages that he had that most other rookies don't have, especially guys at that time who were 18 coming out of high school, was that he could physically compete at the NBA level immediately. Mm-hmm. He could not be pushed around. Really, the only guy who played his position who could do much to him was Ron Artest. And he did. Artest, you know, really thumped him around. It was in the division at the time. But, you know, most nights he was going up against guys who were smaller than him. And while Zion doesn't have the height that some of the guys, like, he is going to be stronger and as physical or more physical than just about everybody he plays. And that's just not something you see from a rookie.
He looks ever. Like a Pro Bowl defensive end. I mean, the guy is absolutely massive. His shoulders are, he's about 6'6" square. His shoulders are just humongous. You know, I was talking to a veteran who'd played against him in the preseason, and he was like, look, if he stays healthy, he's absolutely going to live up to the hype. The one thing he said is, you know, he is going to have to make sure that he doesn't get too big. He's going to have to make sure that he takes care of his knees with as much weight as he carries. But again, the athleticism, and there is some skill there too. The skill of being able to get to the rim. I mean, it's not just catching lobs. He's, you know, he's able to get there off the dribble. They're doing some things, you know, getting him ball on the move where he's attacking downhill. And then he doesn't necessarily have to dunk it to finish. He's got great touch when he's around the basket and he has to finish in traffic.
That's a great point, Tim. He is not a good shooter, and that is for sure. And because that team doesn't have a lot of shooters, teams are going to pack the paint on him. They'll rotate bad defenders. And if he has to take mid-range jumpers, he's going to struggle, I think. But he does have elite finishing around the basket. And I don't just mean stuffing it. He has learned over the years to already. He has learned some finesse around there. And I think that's why I think he'll score. And, you know, the GMs who voted in this really seem to like the Pelicans. They voted them as the team with the most promising young core. Mm-hmm. They said that the Pelicans had the second most impressive offseason, other than the Clippers. The Lakers didn't get any votes, despite acquiring Anthony Davis. I know that was a lopsided trade in terms of assets, but you get Anthony Davis, that's, you know, usually a pretty good sign. And they voted Zion already as the most athletic player in the league. Over Antetokounmpo and over Russell Westbrook, who's been winning that for the last few years.
It really is. Something.
It seems to me that the GMs like both the Pelicans and Zion's future based on.
And you know what? I had Lonzo Ball as my most improved player. We got our little, you know, all those awards picks coming out. I will admit, I revised that late in the third quarter last night at Rocket Spurs. I went with DeJounte Murray. Because let me tell you, DeJounte Murray
but
looked
does he
unbelievable
count?
Last night.
But does he count because he didn't play last but, year? Because I would have voted play, for him. I'm voting for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander because he's going to get a lot of time and he's going to do well.
That's a good point. That.
But
one,
my, thing with, so Murray proved himself as an elite defender. He looked great offensively last night. And if he's going to be an 18-point-per-game scorer, which, again, that's, you know, a pretty lofty projection, but I'm, you know, hypothetically, then I think absolutely he should be in consideration for that award.
Well,
yeah, but he didn't play last year. That would be my only thing. My only that's
I know,
why I
but
didn't
he's
up.
Still making a drastic improvement from the last time he played.
Fair enough. I love DeJounte Murray, and I think he's going to be a star in this league. And I think the only reason he got drafted as late as he did initially was because there were some questions about what went on off the court. So,
well, we talked about him last week. We won't rehash it, but he's a extension candidate, and based on the way he's playing, I don't know if they're going to come to an agreement because I think DeJounte thinks that the sky is the limit, and the Spurs may be more cautious, and rightly so.
Again, my knee-jerk overreaction to watching him play three quarters of preseason basketball is I agree with him. He looked unbelievable.
All right, so Jackie, one other thing about this GM survey.
Yes.
Last year, Brad Stevens was voted by the GMs as the best head coach in the NBA. This year, he did not receive a single vote. Was not in the top five, six, seven. No, was not in the top eight. Did not get a vote. think Brad Stevens may have been a slightly overrated as a coach early on in his career, but you know, I've seen a lot of slander on him over the last year, and now I think he might actually be underrated as a coach.
And you know what the funniest part is? He's asked for none of it. That's the thing.
That's true.
You never hear. He never talks about himself. He never projects himself. He, you know, he's not a what I would call a big personality. I find it amusing sometimes. Listen, it was not a good year for Brad Stevens last year. It was not a good year for anyone associated with the Boston Celtics. Not a single one of them. You could maybe make an argument for Marcus Smart. He may have emerged unscathed, but the rest of them have mud on their hands or blood on their hands. And that includes Brad Stevens, who made some decisions that did not pan out. I think probably coaches and GMs who vote for this know how hard it is to stand up to superstar players at times. You could question whether Brad Stevens did that effectively. So there's a lot of reasons why people have cooled on him, if you will. I still think he's a really good coach, a very good X and O guy. His ATOs, as we know, are somewhat legendary. You know, did he learn a little bit about, who was it that told me this? I think it was Pat Riley that told me once. You know, there are three kinds of coaches. There's a coach who is a player's coach who can handle the personalities better than anyone. Then there's the X and O's coaches that are just, you know, unbelievable, like a Rick Carlisle, let's say, who I don't think would ever be accused of being warm and fuzzy. And then there's the third coach.
And certainly not to McMahon. Wants.
Right. But then there's the third coach, which
has
better
be warm
the perfect
and fuzzy with Luka,
combination of both, right? The one that has the perfect combination of both. And we can, you know, throw out your nominations. I would say that Pop fits that bill at times. I would say
Doc
Steve
Rivers
Kerr fits
at
that bill.
Times.
Doc Rivers is one that you would think of. Phil Jackson, to some degree, earlier in his career, I would say that was true. And those are the coaches that tend to win championships. So Brad Stevens is a work in progress. I would say from the component of learning how to deal with the modern NBA player and putting that all together. It doesn't mean you can't do it. I think we can agree that Kyrie Irving was a gargantuan task for everybody involved and has been everywhere he's been and will be in Brooklyn is my guess. So that's nothing.
You know, I was going to say, Brad Stevens, and he owned it. I mean, he had a bad year last year. But I don't know that there's any coach in the league that would have had a great year in that situation.
Exactly correct. That's I feel the same way.
Speaking of Kyrie,
for that in a GM's poll, right? So
yeah. By the way, I always heard there's two kinds of coaches: those who have been fired and those who will be fired. I guess there's three now, according to Pat Riley.
Eric Spoelstra, who by the way finished second in best coach behind Pop, has never been fired.
He is one of the best coaches.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Who is the most famous man in America right now? I have the name, and you certainly, if you listen to podcasts, know who it is. It's Dylan Miskowitz of Cafe Altura. You know, the guy who needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, was having trouble finding qualified applicants. You know who he went to. Of course you know. He went to ZipRecruiter. If you know anything, listen to any podcast, you know Dylan Miskowitz's story. ZipRecruiter, as you obviously already know, doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. It's got this great technology that identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. One of my good friends listened to our podcast for a year, you know, probably rolled his eyes every time he heard ZipRecruiter ad. But guess what? He had to hire somebody a few weeks ago, and he was texting me, hey, what is your code? I can't remember on ZipRecruiter. So obviously you know about Dylan Miskowitz, but you don't remember that our code is Collective. ZipRecruiter.com/collective, collective. When you need to hire somebody, which we all need to do from time to time, especially you influential people who listen to these podcasts. That's how Dylan found that new director of coffee in just a few days. And with results like that, no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within that first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes, be it 1 to 1 million. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address. We already told you, ZipRecruiter.com/collective. And remember that ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.
Hello. No one is available to take your call.
Speaking of Kyrie, now look, I'm sure that people don't care about the media, and I'm not, I'm an advocate of not media talking about media, but Kyrie has refused to talk to the media 2 days in a row. And he didn't talk to the media, obviously, the whole time he was in China. And I understand why he's being cautious because, you know, just about everybody who said anything about China has had to walk it back. Right. I mean, the other night, Doc Rivers said something that was supportive of Adam Silver. And, like, I don't even remember what he said, but he felt like he had to walk something back. The Clippers had to put out a statement walking it back.
There was a quick clarification after it, yes.
So, look, if he just wants to no comment, but he's injured right now. And, look, I'm not going to focus on the fact that whether he's talking to the media or not. But it's more about the fact that is Kyrie Irving running the organization or not? And I'm just going to tell you that I'm not encouraged by the fact that Kyrie is dictating whether he's talking to the media or not in the early going. Mm-hmm. Because this is what I can just tell you. I've been around teams with star players, and this is what happens. It starts out with the small things like, hey, I don't want to talk to the media today. Well, the rules say you have to talk, and you haven't talked for 2 weeks. And no, I'm not talking to you today. And the organization lets them do it. And that's one of the things I'll say about the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat run the organization in a certain way, and one of the rules of the Miami Heat organization is you talk to the media. And that doesn't make them a good organization, but the way that they have their players enforce the league rules makes it clear about how what's going to happen when you're on the Miami Heat. And I'm just telling you, I'm like, here we go. Here we go with Kyrie. Now he's already dictating things. You know, what else is he, you know, this week he's dictating talking to the media. Next week, what's he going to dictate? Next month, what's he going to dictate? And I'm frankly annoyed by it. And, you know, last year his now teammate, Kevin Durant, didn't talk to media for 2 weeks and nobody got on him and they let him get away with it, which I was annoyed by then. But this is a little bit different. I don't think Durant would ever be accused of, you know, operating a franchise. I think with Kyrie, it is dangerous, Jackie, and I just don't like seeing that.
Well, it's a little early to say exactly what's going on, right? And I do think the one thing I would say is this whole China kerfuffle has made everybody hesitant, and I don't blame anybody for that.
Especially because
he doesn't have to talk about China. He doesn't. He can just say I don't have any comment.
But you know Kyrie as well as I do. Once Kyrie starts talking, he doesn't stop. I mean, that's just, he's a very much a stream of consciousness person. And, you know, there were days in Boston when he didn't feel like talking, but when he does talk, he talks. And, you know, maybe they're saving, I don't know. I haven't been down there. I'm going down there next week. I'm looking forward to being down there. I'm going to be down there.
Maybe he'll be talking by then. Maybe he won't.
Maybe not.
I bet you he'll talk to Jackie.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where we stand, and wherever we stand is where we do. You know, I've had to say some and write some critical things about Kyrie before, during, and after his time in Boston. We've always had a decent relationship, but you never know. And so yep. You go down there. I don't know what's going to happen, but whatever's going to happen, I'm going to do my job, and he's going to do his.
You know, with Kyrie,
he's a spectacular player, but he's a heck of a handful.
He's a handful.
There's a pain in the ass to production ratio that you can handle a whole lot of pain in the ass if the production is there. In Cleveland, he was well worth it. In Boston, the ratio was out of whack. We'll see what it is in Brooklyn.
Yep, that's a fair assessment.
That's going to be a new advanced stat. The PA, you know, they have the free rebound percentage, they have assist percentage. You have the PA percentage.
The P to / P ratio?
Well, what was Russell Westbrook's in Oklahoma City?
It got out of whack last year.
I'd say.
You know, I want to hear about the most wholesome.
Well, Royce wrote a story about how things are different, just how everything's different with the Thunder this year. And, you know, their record's going to be different, too. Let's be clear about that. But he was just talking about how, you know, Russ liked the locker room warm. And so the locker room was turned up. I don't know what the degrees were, but, you know, one of the things that Royce has noticed is the locker room is a more even temperature than before. That
Royce
made me laugh because
quite as much antiperspirant. He's saving money.
Right. Reminded me of when LeBron.
I'll say this. Go ahead. Russ doesn't have control of the thermostat in Houston.
That's right. James has the key to that lock that goes over the thermostat.
Whatever. I mean, and Russ understood that when he joined. He's joining James Harden's franchise. He's also joining
by the
James
way,
Harden's
wasn't the easiest
offense,
guy
and we'll
to
see
always,
how that works.
He's not the easiest guy to deal with either.
But the P to / P ratio is on. It's
on
good
point.
For him. It's on point. And by the way, the Peter / P. Ray show with the guy that the Rockets traded for Russ got out of whack last year because the production slipped significantly with Chris Paul.
Right.
Where is Chris Paul's relationship with the Rockets right now?
I mean, I think that it's just it was a brief business relationship that didn't end well, and I don't think there'll be an exchange of any Christmas cards, but I also don't think it's just really just nasty bad blood. I mean,
Chris Paul has
3 years left on a max contract thanks to the Houston Rockets.
Right. Let me ask you this, Tim. Though, so I thought of many things when LeBron embarked on his very ill-advised soliloquy the other day. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that just crossed my mind was, it was just so unprovoked in terms of Daryl Morey and his comments. Unprovoked. Yeah. And I don't think anyone brought that up. And then I did sort of wonder, is he he's sticking up for his boy there? Like, is that part
That's
of
an
why?
Interesting, that is an interesting
I just wondered that.
Thought.
It, by the way, it's not, go, it's like not just... It's not just Chris. Remember that, in terms of the LeBron Daryl Morey thing, that's obviously a complicated topic. Remember, it's not just Chris Paul. Remember his other boy who, depending on who you talk to, and certainly Carmelo feels this way, was wrong.
Oh, absolutely. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Well, so that's
so,
all
yeah,
interesting, I mean,
there,
isn't
there's
it?
A couple banana mm-hmm. boat guys who are certainly not going to be going out of the way to protect
like Moore. Before
I did ask Chris Paul who is the Players Association president for his thoughts on the situation with China. This is when the Lakers were still over there and he acted like he wasn't really sure what was going on. He had to
he was in full punt formation there.
Right.
Yes.
The irony of the Daryl LeBron again, I'm not going to call it a feud. Has any been more been vocal on LeBron's half in terms of calling LeBron the greatest player who ever lived above Michael Jordan? That's Daryl Morey.
Yeah, but
because of the analytics.
I like your theory.
Yeah, right. But the irony of that is somewhat interesting. Yeah. That's all. I think you told me once, Brian, that LeBron never forgets sights. Wasn't it you that told me that? LeBron has a mental list of people that...
He's got a great memory, but his memory seems to be like Jordan, I guess. His memory seems to be more focused on slights than on praise.
Right. I'll say this. I like your conspiracy theory, and there's probably something to that. Two of LeBron's best friends have, certainly probably feel like they've been done wrong by Daryl Morey in the last year. But also, LeBron is a world-class businessman, and Daryl Morey put his business in some, in harm's way. The people who are most at risk financially from this whole controversy with China, the number one guy is Tillman Fertitta. I mean, the Rockets are probably losing somewhere around $20 to $25 million annually in Chinese sponsorships. Tillman's sticking with him because honestly, he doesn't have a whole lot of choice in terms of number one, maximizing your chance to win championships, and number two, dealing with a potential public relations crisis. But the other guys who are most at risk are the superstars, especially the ones who have the signature shoe deals. LeBron, Chris Paul, two in the Rockets locker room, James Harden and Russell Westbrook.
And that's why I think at the end of the day, Steve Kerr, when he elected to pass, when
Steph
Steve
Curry,
Kerr makes...
Klay Thompson.
That's right. Because if Steve Kerr had said something that cost his players something versus him just exercising, his political viewpoints where he mm-hmm. would potentially face the blowback is a lot different than saying something that could hurt guys who he relies on in his locker room. My viewpoint, Jackie, on what LeBron said, I'm going to put the political stuff aside because, I don't talk about that. I don't know. I can't get into his head to hear what he was saying on that. My viewpoint about that was he was ranting about how he was angry with Daryl Morey. He was angry about Daryl because of the business aspect. He was angry about Daryl. He's lingering anger about Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. I just don't think right now he likes Daryl very much. And I think
and
that
he
was
angry that the Lakers went to China with this huge, massive
but
international
that's business.
Controversy.
Okay,
that's
but stop it. But stop it. Stop it. Stop it. This is a man who had everyone believe he was about free right, freedom of expression. This was a platform on which he's built his reputation. And did he realize how ridiculous he sounded? When, first of all, to say, you should have waited a week. Stop it. I don't even know what he was thinking.
But that's
when
him.
He said that.
In my viewpoint, that's him whining about Daryl. That's not him making a political statement.
Yeah.
I mean, know that he came
no,
off
no, 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 no.
as
but, it doesn't matter whether he's mad at Daryl or whining because he was inconvenienced. He said we had a difficult week in China. My goodness, do you know how difficult the week was for those Hong Kong protesters? He has to understand. He's smart enough to understand.
I know, but
how
Jackie,
badly that plays.
I know.
Let's call a spade here, okay? Nike's paying him $1 billion over the next 30 years, right? Isn't that the deal he signed? This is about business. And you know what? If he had said that, people would have been upset, but they would have had a lot more respect for that than what came out of his mouth.
Obviously,
it was something.
It was obviously one of the more damaging things he said. This is why I don't like politics involving in sports. And I recognize that it happens because my point is, where does it stop? Are we asking athletes about Ukraine? Are we asking athletes about Syria? This is my point. That's why I would just keep it separate. LeBron obviously didn't really understand what he was doing in that moment, which is extraordinarily rare because his awareness is his fine thing.
I honestly think
I know it was a good line. I get it. But I honestly think he was just mad at Daryl. And I think, read David.
Come on, now, Brian, now you're being naive. He was mad about his business and
because of Daryl.
His money got mad.
Okay, don't talk about Daryl. Talk about the money, because that's really, he wouldn't have been mad at Daryl.
Yeah, but he was mad
said something.
LeBron is a guy, I remember when he went way out of his way to rip Phil Jackson for drafting Frank Ntilikina over Dennis Smith Jr. because he wanted to take a shot at Phil Jackson because Phil did Melo wrong. So
that's right.
I mean, LeBron is a guy who will, grind axes for his friends publicly.
The all-time pounce on Phil was from Jackie's interview. Where he pounced on the posse thing. I genuinely believe that, yes, the posse thing, kind of like this thing that just happened with Daryl. Yes, the posse thing upset him, but he wasn't just angry about the posse thing. He was angry about the Carmelo thing. And in my viewpoint, if you read Dave McMenamin's story, that sort of was like an account, a very good story that Dave wrote about everything that happened while they were over there, LeBron was in the room with Adam Silver calling for Daryl Morey to be disciplined. Okay? And he wasn't calling for him to be, he was calling for him to be disciplined because he messed with the player's stuff, not because his position. I don't believe.
And the league clearly could not set that precedent because you can't discipline Daryl Morey for a political tweet, but then allow LeBron, for example, to vent his feelings about whatever American political subject he wants.
Well, let me just say this. As somebody who was just in China for 3 weeks and was sitting there in Shenzhen, where half of this arena was being used for basketball and the other half of the arena was being used as a staging ground for the Chinese military down the street from the bridge to Hong Kong, okay? I can tell you that while you're in country there, your mind is not your priority situation is going to be different. But I honestly believe, and I can't speak for sure of what LeBron was saying, I honestly believe that in that room in China, when he's talking to Adam Silver, and in front of those TV cameras, he's speaking from a business perspective, not from a political perspective. Now, that was an error in judgment, Jackie, because he should have known better that he can't split that difference right now, that he can't. But I think he was talking all about business, and I also think that it's more targeted anger towards Daryl Morey in general as it is opposed to whether it's a freedom of speech issue. But I can't prove that. I can't say for sure, and LeBron obviously is not going to talk about it anymore. And I also know that if you are on a certain side of an issue, especially when we're talking about politics, there's nobody that you can talk to. Then this is why I don't want to talk politics. And I don't talk politics with people. I don't talk religion with people because once somebody is in a certain side, you can't do anything about it. But that's my viewpoint. Doesn't mean that he shouldn't face, the blowback from what he said. That's my viewpoint.
Well, you're right about the business end of it. that's really where this is. That's where this comes from, and we can, you know, it's
which is
just,
why I don't have a, which is why I don't have a problem with those guys not speaking to the media in China. I do have a problem with you not speaking to the media when you've been back here for a week, even if you just want to no comment it and give us an update on how your face is feeling. So, yeah. All right. Well, Tim's got to go. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you next week when we will have regular season action to talk about.